Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we have a returning guest, Jarrett Stepman of the Heritage Foundation, who writes for DailySignal.com. Recently, he spoke about the Alex Jones InfoWars situation, and particularly ways in which some of the big tech, some of the companies, even Apple and also Facebook, they're starting to censor his message, if we can use that word. And I say that only because censorship generally applies towards the government. But on the other hand, this is a free speech type of case. Jarrett, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much.
And first, let's go ahead and just tell us the specifics of the story, and then we'll get into this issue of, you know, well, what is censorship?
Yeah, absolutely. So a number of big media companies like YouTube and Apple have, well, you can kind of call it censorship. Of course, it's not done through the government. What they've done is they've deplatformed InfoWars particularly. They've taken his media off their websites. They've stripped it, and they've kind of done it all at the same time. The only notable exception being Twitter, interestingly enough, even though Twitter's kind of fallen into some of these issues, mm-hmm. Twitter decided, and their CEO and president said that InfoWars hadn't violated any of their terms of service, so they weren't going to be banned from that platform. But to a certain extent, it's basically meant that InfoWars can no longer be seen on a variety of media platforms where it could before.
All right. For those not familiar with it, who is Alex Jones and what is InfoWars?
So InfoWars, honestly, some have tried to identify it with the right, but it really is kind of a conspiracy website. They have a lot of kind of wild theories and things like this. It's kind of an exaggerated program that has a very unusual audience and, you know, dedicated fan group. But, you know, I think the real issue with this is not specifically with the InfoWars content, which, you know, has a lot of its problems. The overall issue is the one of, you know, who becomes the gatekeepers of what is considered legitimate speech? And they've labeled him a peddler of hate speech and things like this. But as we've seen, especially with tech companies that are kind of monolithically very, very liberal, that definition tends to bleed out into more mainstream views, into more mainstream websites. And I think we've seen a pattern of frankly, abuse in many cases where conservative opinion is simply targeted and wiped out or cast down from these websites because it simply doesn't conform with what the left wants in America. So I think that is the problem here is that Alex Jones, whatever you think of him and whatever you think of InfoWars, this potentially, and I hate to use the term slippery slope, but it could lead to potentially more aggressive moves by these tech companies against more mainstream conservative opinion.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking of this story, and I was thinking, oh, who cares? It's only Facebook. Who cares? It's only Apple. And then all of a sudden, they realize, no, no, no. These are so big, these companies. It's just like Dennis Prager said for a recent TV special that our ministry has produced about this whole issue of gatekeepers and the big tech and so forth. He said, look, if Delta said, you know, we're not going to allow conservatives anymore to fly on our airlines. He said that would be terrible, but at least there's other airlines out there. But if there's only one YouTube, there's only one Google, you know, so this is a big deal.
It is, especially in the way that they all kind of worked in concert together, too. I mean, they all kind of worked at once to deplatform a single website. I mean, obviously, you know, the opinions in Silicon Valley and tech are very much uniform. I think that is a pretty much given thing at this point. And there are some out there. I think some have increased the worry because we've had some like Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut, saying on Twitter that this was just the tip of the iceberg, that he hopes that these sites do more to strip down more websites and go after them en masse. And I think that is where the worry comes from, because as you said, these are incredibly powerful platforms. I mean, they've essentially operated as the gatekeepers to the internet. When your content can't get on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, it is very difficult to find those audiences. You can immediately overnight see your audience nearly disappear. So I think there's a very good reason to be worried about it. I mean, it's not like there are necessarily a lot of other options for social media other than these big, big companies.
Yeah, and it's very ironic, too, because I guess a lot of this stuff is done primarily through computers, but those computers have been programmed by people to flag certain words and so forth. And the amazing thing is, as you well know, about a month ago, somebody posted the Declaration of Independence, the entire document, and it got flagged as hate speech on Facebook and was pulled down. Comment on that. I mean, that should chill all of us.
Well, it really should, and that is just one of many examples. I mean, it flagged the Babylon Bee, which is a satirical website, because it had an article that I kind of made a funny joke about CNN literally laundering messages through a washing machine, and it actually cited this and threatened essentially to pull their stuff and censor their content on their website. So, you know, this is something that's been happening rather consistently, and I think that there are a lot of people that are afraid, especially when you have companies like YouTube that partner with organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center, a very, very left-wing activist so-called civil rights group that has labeled so many conservatives' very mainstream opinions as hate speech. You know, are they going to come after you next? And I think a lot of people have reason to be quite concerned.
Here's a quote from your article, or actually you're quoting from Facebook in your article. Upon review, we have taken it down, meaning it being the InfoWars website or their content, for glorifying violence and using dehumanizing language to describe people who are transgender, Muslims, and immigrants, which violates our hate speech policies, end quote. You know, a lot of stuff can be done by condemning so-called hate speech.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's something that worries me about, and of course many of these other media companies had the similar lines, but you know, what does that allude to? I mean, is it really, I think, genuine hate speech, or is it even anybody who questions the modern kind of narrative about a gender identity? I mean, would that be considered hate speech under these guidelines? I think that's why a lot of people are concerned, because some of these seem to be very nebulous. I mean, on their face, they seem very bad. Obviously, we don't want to see people aggressively attacked or people insulted and things like this. But what does that lead to? I mean, it's such an open-ended thing when you call something hate speech. I mean, you know, we've had organizations like the National Rifle Association being called terrorist organizations by people of the left. Does that mean that their speech is terroristic and that they should be shut down by these media websites? I think that is why people are so worried, because again, the opinions from these websites is so monolithically left-wing in Silicon Valley and the tech industry, they can't identify the difference between mainstream opinion and something that is legitimately extremist. And I think, you know, I think that's something everybody should be worried about, not just people on the right, but people across the political spectrum.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about the example of Robert Spencer. I don't know if you know who that is. Are you familiar with Robert Spencer?
I am familiar. I'm quite familiar.
Yeah, good. Jihadwatch.com, jihadwatch.org, a best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author on all sorts of books related to Islam and Muhammad and so forth. And yet he's been labeled, unfortunately, and misleadingly so, in my opinion, by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hater. And yet they don't turn around and say that these particular jihad groups that actually not only speak, but actually promote real violence. I mean, people being beheaded because they're infidels, slay the infidel wherever you find them, you know, whatever, that kind of stuff. So wait a minute. So on the one hand, Spencer is supposedly guilty of Islamophobia, and that's hate speech. But on the other hand, these other people, which are promoting real violence in the name of jihad, are not carriers of hate speech or, you know, purveyors of hate speech. That's crazy.
It is crazy. And, you know, we see too often with these platforms such wild double standards. I mean, you know, we've seen how long, you know, Louis Farrakhan on Twitter has said so many vile things about Jewish people in particular. And it took so long for Twitter just to de-verify his account. I mean, there was a really calls for months about, you know, why have so many other people been aggressively gone after? Some people say they've been shadow banned by Twitter where their content can't be seen. And yet this person continues to hurl these really vile statements, and nothing is done about it. It seems like there's a wild double standard there. And, you know, I think that's that kind of double standard. Now, sometimes they could write off as that their logarithms didn't catch things or whatnot, but I think we have very good reason to think that the industry itself is certainly biased towards one point of view.
All right, so now let me ask you this question, because we're both conservatives. We don't believe in government censorship, which is government censorship basically is prior constraint on the part of the government against speech. Okay, we believe in free speech. Obviously, there are some things that free speech would not include yelling fire in a crowded theater if there is no fire. So how do we deal with this in light of the fact that Google and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and Apple, these are private companies?
Well, it is certainly a complicated situation. And obviously, in the cases where websites are very extremist, there are, of course, still, you know, things like traditional libel laws and things like this. But, you know, I have to say that there was an example not too many months ago where Google put out a fact-check tool that was really only going after conservative websites. You know, after a lot of conservatives online and other places started to respond to this, started to call them out on what they were doing, a lot of these companies, you know, they are maybe very left-wing, but they're still in the business of having customers and having your business. And so when there was such an outcry and such clear bias, I think it did certainly change some of the outlook of these companies. But it requires a sustained response to kind of the measures that they're taking. That's why it is so important when we do see things like what happened to InfoWars, that it doesn't just something that we say, oh, well, let it slide because it happened to this one guy who's a little out there. This is something that can happen to anybody, and it's something to be worried about.
Yeah, because especially because now he, that is Alex Jones, is pretty high profile. I mean, I've even heard of him, you know, whereas there's some of these other people I might not have heard about. And so the smaller Alex Jones types, they don't even get an opportunity, you know, to be heard that they're being censored. So if censored is the right word, is it the right word?
I think it's the right word. I mean, censorship, you know, a lot of times people see it as something that's coming down from the government, but, you know, this is censorship on these private platforms. I mean, clearly their point of view has been stripped from these platforms. Now, obviously, I think that next step, which is calling for the government to come in and censor things, which isn't a far-fetched idea. We've had many people saying that the government should go out and basically, you know, have commissions to see what is fake news and what is real news. I think those things are incredibly dangerous, which I think should be a lesson to conservatives, too. I mean, when we do want to bring in the power of government into these decisions, we do run the risk. I mean, we've seen things like the Fairness Doctrine, how that's been used against conservative points of view, specifically conservative talk radio, to shut them down. So I think there is a reason to be wary about including the government in a solution to this big problem.
I think you're absolutely right. In fact, even just the phrase fake news, what is fake news? You know, it's the other guy's news delivery service. I mean, you know, I mean, some people are talking about CNN as if it's fake news. I don't agree with it. It's certainly left wing. Sometimes they get their stories wrong. But, you know, I wouldn't call it fake news. Fake news is when you have actual facts that are distorted and they're, you know, specifically, explicitly distorted, and the person telling these lies knows that they're distorted. So you're right. As a phrase, it's not helpful in the debate.
No, and I think the founding fathers, you know, they created things like the First Amendment because they realized that, you know, who is the arbiter of what's fake news? Should it be a government body somewhere that has the kind of frailties of the human experience? I mean, really what fake news is, you know, a lot of times simply news I don't like. And I think that
that's,
you know,
right,
they left that to the American people to decide. And I think that's a great thing about America. I think that's why America has so often come closer to the truth than other places in the world, because we do have the concept of the freedom of speech and the First Amendment to protect that.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds to wrap up. One quick comment. I've seen some of the old-time comedians, and I am thinking of Mel Brooks, you know, saying this environment today is toxic for the comedians because, you know, you can't say anything and it's politically correct.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about this, and I do hope this starts to change. I think, you know, pointing out some of the absurdities in their arguments and how they have gone after people like comedians. I mean, we're getting to the point, you know, we're just pointing out in some cases that the emperor has no clothes is seen as something like hate speech. I think this really needs to turn around for the sake of the American people. We need to bring back that culture of free speech in this country. It's something that we do very well as Americans, that right now I think we're in a bad spot. We're letting this kind of college campus politics of shutting down opinions we don't like. I think we're getting that on writ large in American society. I think it's very dangerous for our future.
Jared Stepman, DailySignal.com. Thanks so much for sharing. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.